The following is Megan Schwartz and Brian Bono's talk, Slowing Down the Machine, Interrupting Process for the Greater Good, from the 2014 Information Architecture Summit. The 2014 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's All You Can Learn. Stay tuned after the podcast for more information about All You Can Learn.
All right, well, we're going to get started. So thank you all very much for coming to our talk, Slowing Down the Machine, Interrupting Process for the Greater Good. We're going to talk to you today about time when we were able to change our process to accommodate a project that was kind of unique. So I'm Megan, and this is Brian. I'm a user experience architect at Team Detroit, a company that does advertising. And Brian is a creative director at a competitor of ours, so we're kind of fighting, but we used to work together. So we are friends, but turned enemies. So where we used to work together, where I work, we have one client, 1,500 employees to serve that one client, and a lot of process. And we have these processes in place to help us achieve our ultimate goal of getting shit done. That's what we do. That's what we pride ourselves on. We get stuff out the door fast. So we like process because this is a good thing. It's good to be able to get work out and get things done quickly. But process can just barrel ahead, and process can make it difficult for us to be innovative and get to do things that are different. It can feel like a complete runaway train. And Brian and I know that because we've tried to change our process many times, and we've failed almost as many times as we've tried. But then we tried something different, and actually, it worked. And that's what we're going to talk to you about today. What did we do differently? Well, we actually emphasized empathy over logic. So we actually worked on creating understanding with our coworkers and our colleagues and our project teams instead of trying to convince them that this was the right thing to do because, duh.
So our first example, we're going to go through a project where we failed to change our process because we tried using logic versus empathy. Our client had requested that we reorganize a ton of video content on an existing YouTube brand page. There was over 100 videos on this page, and each of them kind of had their own theme, so it was really confusing for users to try to navigate. So we went back in and tried to reorganize this content in a way that made sense to the users. And we had so much content, we thought the best process was to go into a card sort. So with no budget or additional resources, we took all the content and then printed it out on a set of cards that we gave to a group of people that we pulled together and let them just kind of sort it out into groups that made sense to them.
We actually physically cut out the cards ourselves in the cafeteria and made this, and it was like this sort of awesome, fun little ordeal. We're going to do this card sort. It's going to be great.
Yeah, we were super excited to do it. Really thought it would actually convince the team to kind of listen to us versus just keep kind of plowing forward with what they thought we should do. So we put together a presentation and prepared to show our team and got it all ready, took it to the team, and basically they completely ignored us. They didn't listen at all and, you know, ultimately kind of showed us that logic really wasn't enough.
We were so proud. We came to them and we were like, look at this awesome thing we did, we're so great. And we thought we'd just solve this problem so easily, and we handed them the spreadsheet with the recommendations for how the content should be organized. And they were like, good job, thanks, it's really helpful. And then they just went off and did their own thing anyway. And we were just kind of like, you know, what the hell happened? This sucks, you know, why'd they ignore us? They don't like us, they don't value us. So why did logic fail? Why were we unable to convince them when we had logic so much on our side? Well, it turns out that it's not really the process. Process is super flexible. We all know this. We've read the Agile books. We've read Lean UX. People are super inflexible. It's really hard sometimes to convince people that you need to have some kind of a change in order to accommodate a different kind of problem. And people have attitudes, which is just this kind of already negative word that we think of. When we say people have attitude, we think of it in terms of, you know, they're being rude or they're being insubordinate. But it's true. I mean, people really can have these kind of impactful attitudes that make it difficult to make change. So let's talk about how attitude is formed. attitude is an element within an organizational culture. We always think of it as terms of somebody comes in and they have this attitude already kind of formed, but actually these things are fostered inside cultures. So we have these assumptions or often unconscious mental models that kind of provide a framework for how we view our organization and the things that we do within it. That leads to these values, that the beliefs and ideologies, we're not talking about the ones on the wall with the cute kitties, but the real, actual beliefs and ideologies that are harbored within the organizations that kind of guide what you do. And that leads to these processes and behaviors, the actions, the tasks, the things that we have in place to get work done. And then that harbors or helps influence these emotions, these attitudes. And it all cycles back up and it influences each other. So as these things continue to cycle through, these things can get super ingrained in an organization. What we're saying here is that attitude is learned. It's learned within your organization. People aren't just assholes for the sake of being assholes. They have these things kind of embedded in them through the culture. If you have a culture where it's okay to come in at 11 and leave at 4, that's what they're gonna do. It's not because they're lazy, it's because that's what they can do. So, if you want to change your organizational culture, then you need to change attitudes. And if you want to change your attitudes, you need to understand how they're fostered within your organizational culture, how these things have been created. And we all have seen this word so many times, I know, but it's true. We can't do this without empathy. We have to apply that piece, that skill, that tool in our toolbox that we already use and apply to our users in order to understand what they need and how their mental models and frameworks are being created, and we just have to apply that inwardly to our colleagues.
So now we're going to look at a project where we succeeded with changing our process. In the first example, we tried using logic and that failed. Basically, kind of got this attitude from the greater team that, yeah, that's nice, but we already know what we're going to do. So this time around, we had to try something different. We could kind of feel the project needed a restart, and it was heading off the rails entirely, but it really had this potential to be great. We saw that logic was useless and that we needed a new way in, and this new way was using empathy. So meet the Awesome App. This project was handed down to us from a client for us to explore, and when they gave it to us, it was a really fuzzy idea that they kind of described as something that was part game, part utility, but just really confusing when it came down to it. But again, we saw that it was really full of potential, and we believed it could be something great. So like I said, they brought us this initial idea and wanted us to look at actually developing it into a final app. And this was totally reasonable, something, you know, we should be good at doing. We jumped on it, we thought we heard our clients, but basically, we thought we could do one better. We immediately thought we'll just go ahead and build a prototype, even though we didn't really even know what sort of problems we were solving for. So what's the problem with that? Well, basically a prototype of what? We didn't even know who our users were or the problems they had and how exactly to even solve for them. The entire team was just so excited to kind of flex creative and tech muscle and build this prototype to kind of just impress the clients. So we realized we had to put the brakes on. We realized it was just way too risky to keep kind of plowing forward with these ideas without having anything really based in any sort of research. And again, we thought the app would be super cool if we could do it, but not the way this thing was heading forward. So this is an org chart kind of showing the structure of the team we had. At the top, we had our clients that had this initial fuzzy idea, and they would pass those ideas and requirements down to our executive stakeholders, who would in turn interpret it for us, the implementers, to try to actually make this thing an actual app. So as we worked through this project, we kept coming across all these attitudes that were kind of holding us back from being able to change our process. And these are the five that we're going to talk about today: impulsive, angst, territorial, disregard, and apathy. And the first one we're going to look at is impulsive. So this image basically shows kind of how every single meeting we had about this app would eventually turn into pretty much everybody just shouting out ideas and not really listening to anyone and
everybody was kind of jumping to be that hero that could just solve this thing, you know, right out the gate versus slowing down and doing research and kind of actually seeing what the right thing to do was.
If we had barreled forward based on that meeting, this thing would have cleaned your house, it would have washed your dog, it would have, you know, filled up your car with gas. I mean, it was just crazy. It was everything in the kitchen sink.
So how do we get to being so impulsive? We start with this assumption that we already know who the user is, and every single person on the team kind of has this different idea of who that person is, whether it's, you know, a friend or someone else's kid. We just have this mental vision of who we think the user is. And ultimately, our organization really values those people that bring forward solutions versus people that bring forward questions that ultimately end up costing more money and time to try to really find that answer. And then to make it even worse, we always have this mode of brainstorming solutions right up front. We don't really take the time to understand the problem. We just think someone in the room is going to have the solution. All of that ladders up to kind of creating this environment where everybody starts becoming super impulsive, trying to solve the problem, you know, kind of feeling that like that's the way to be successful in our organization. So how do we approach the problem? We met with the stakeholders individually. We did this just because anytime we all were in a room together, either people would just start talking over one or another, or they would just kind of agree to more or less make the meeting end. So as we interviewed everybody individually, we saw these two different themes that kept popping up. One was gaming and one was utility. And when we were thinking about it, it just seemed like those were two separate ends of a spectrum. Basically, we had to resolve that discord before we moved forward with a design. So Megan had a great idea of using a continuum to kind of map out these notes that we had. On one end was gaming, the other end was utility. And it was nice because it gave us this visual way to show the stakeholders that they literally had very little consensus between the team. And once we had that, we put together a presentation and then prepared to show it to the executive creative director. This is what we showed him, and it was a little bit scary to actually do this part. We weren't sure how he would react to one of our first reviews not being a review of PSD designs or, you know, some sort of creative output, and that actually we were trying to sell him on the fact that we didn't have designs and we wanted just time and money to do more research.
We didn't want to tell him that we didn't have alignment. This was a way to show him and let him form that conclusion on his own.
And it was funny is when he first was looking at this chart, and originally it was the actual pieces of paper that had everybody's comments on it, you could kind of see him going up and trying to decode where his answers fell, and he started on the gaming side because that was what he kept saying he thought this would be, but then he started finding his other answers all over the entire map. So even, you know, just himself, he literally spanned this whole spectrum. So at some point, we realized he was starting to actually crack. So basically, we saw this doubt start to sneak in, and you saw him move from this really confident, impulsive position to something much more doubtful and starting to question if we could really even move forward right now. So we jumped right on that doubt. We really use it as an opening to actually start a discussion about design research and why exactly we thought we needed more. And once we had him on our side, it was easy to use him as leverage to get everybody else on the team to kind of see what we were talking about and why that would get us to where we had to be. And by the end of all these discussions, pretty much all the stakeholders started calling for more research as well.
Yeah, and shit kind of got cray. They were going completely insane brainstorming these research ideas to the point where they were talking about building rooms and bringing in furniture designers to actually like design a room for these personas. And as sort of somebody who's like really research-minded, I was kind of nervous about that, but I had to let that go and just be super excited that they were excited and that they were getting enthusiastic about this idea and using their kind of creative impulsive brains to, you know, just talk about the research. They still had that, you know, kind of satisfaction of being able to brainstorm, but it was about something that actually made sense for the stage we were in for the project.
So like she was saying, we, as a group, the creative team is exactly that. We're super impulsive. That's kind of what we feel, why they even have us on the team. So, you know, we're always jumping to have a solution. So once we got this opportunity to think creatively about research, like you said, we all kind of just went ballistic and started dreaming up just wild things. But it was at least great to see everybody kind of dig in and, you know, really enjoy talking about that. So the team wanted to get into research planning. We saw this shift from excitement about design to actually being excited about the research. And it was just nice to have this, like, finally moment where all of a sudden the entire team, top to bottom, realized that, you know, it was just too risky to, like, move forward on this thing without any understanding of the problems we were trying to solve or even who it was actually for. So the next attitude is angst. So right away, our team had to deal with just this huge feeling of angst. We constantly felt this pressure to move forward and move faster and actually bring forward designs. Anytime we ever met with, you know, different members of the team, it was always just, if they agreed to slow down, you could tell it was, you know, begrudgingly, they really didn't want to do it. You know, they just kept pushing that, like, you know, we got to move forward, and we didn't even know what we would show the client, even if we had something, and really even what we were doing, period.
Again, we only had 2 months, so there was just feeling of like, ah, oh, we're not using our time well.
So let's look at how we got to being so full of angst. So we start with the assumption that we need to be first at this organization, pretty much. That is the success metric. If someone else beats us to doing something, there's really no reason to even do it at that point. So to make that happen, we ultimately value shipping the product versus actually doing something that's the right solution. In order to make that ship date happen, we basically work back from a launch date and then give everyone on the team basically the bare minimum time needed where they could actually get something done. And all this leads up to this environment where you really just feel no support and just a ton of pressure to keep kind of plowing forward. You know, don't stop, don't ask questions, just keep making designs. So what was our approach to the problem? We started with realizing that our entire team was confused. If you asked anyone to simply state this in a sentence, what this app was or who it was for, you would get like a, you know, three paragraph rambling response on what this thing actually was. So the team started to police itself and stop any discussions around design. For me, that was something that was super hard just because I'm so used to, you know, anytime I can throw out a solution, I almost feel like that's what I'm supposed to be doing versus kind of falling back and, you know, following a process that'll get us somewhere that we should be. So at that point, we were really careful to never commit to a product idea. Anytime we talked to clients or stakeholders, we would never really put a stake on the ground on what this thing could be or, you know, exactly who it was for. Just worked really hard to keep it as fuzzy as possible for as long as possible. And then no one on the team really tried to take ownership. And, you know, typically that's what happens in the creative department. All of a sudden, you know, we have this idea that we think is awesome. So we start plowing forward, just expecting everybody to support our idea, even if it really doesn't make sense strategically or for the user. So we saw this shift of angst becoming compliance. It was slow at first. Even for myself, I would try to like not do it, but eventually at some point I'd get excited about an idea and start, you know, kind of riffing on something with the group, and, you know, to everybody's credit, they just kind of would rein me in. And after that happening for a few weeks, I finally broke that habit. And it was just interesting to go through that process, but even with the compliance on our internal team, the stakeholders still seemed really shaky that this was the right thing forward and that they didn't understand how we could move to the next step without actually bringing creative forward, and they were kind of pressuring us to, you're gonna have to sell this thing with your excitement. And you know, we were excited, and if we weren't, we wouldn't have been working this hard to make it happen. So stopping all the discussion around design, like I said, that was a huge challenge for me. Visual design, really anyone on the creative team, it's why we were hired to solve problems, not dig deeper and do research. It just wasn't a skill set that we really had. But eventually we became comfortable with not being, you know, the idea people on the team, and kind of step back and use our time and effort towards, you know, brainstorming great ways to help this research. And the team really worked hard, again, helping us feel comfortable that we didn't have to have a solution in every single meeting.
People got so used to policing themselves or each other and saying, no design, no design, no design, anytime that something came up, that people started correcting themselves. They'd start saying like, oh, we should do, and then we'd like, oh, never mind, you know, table that, write it down. We'll get to that some other time, but right now we're focused on the research.
Yeah, a little tactic that actually helped, that we had a little like Word doc that we basically kept open during meetings. So like anytime, you know, these ideas would start coming out, somebody would, you know, jot it down. Rarely ever do we even go back to any of those, but it was a step towards at least making you feel like you were being listened. So again, it made you comfortable that that awesome idea would be captured, it wouldn't be lost, but you know, let's not derail the conversation, let's keep moving forward. So the result was all the design discussion stopped. It made it okay for us not to have solutions in our presentation and instead just focus on the research that we wanted to do with our users.
Okay, so our next attitude that we had to deal with was my personal favorite one, which was territorial. We had the entire team super excited about the research now, right? We had creative, we had strategy, UX, everybody was on board. Everybody was getting kind of really, really into this idea of doing the research and diving deeper into it. And we took all this bundle of enthusiasm and we went to our research team, our analytics team, and we said, we're ready to go, we're ready to do this. And they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Completely resistant to this idea of having the whole team be so involved in the research planning. And the reason for that is they're used to seeing people have this predefined idea, come to research to prove it out, take whatever nuggets they can grab from the research results and apply it, you know, stick it into a PowerPoint and show that this idea has legs. And we were coming to them with a completely fuzzy idea. We didn't have anything super defined yet, so they just weren't able to really understand the concept and really trust us that that's what we were here to do. So how did we get to territorial in our organization? Well, we have this assumption that any influence that you are going to have over the project is only determined by your role, that there's clear boundaries and barriers that exist that won't allow you to have any influence beyond what you've been assigned. We value subject matter experts very much, and we've clearly broken them up into departments so that there's this, you know, kind of value of, you know, this department does this and this department does that, so there's no real kind of crossover seen, you know, between departments. So the action becomes that people are only involved in the project when they can contribute, when we think that we need their expertise. And that becomes territorial. People feel they need to protect that piece. This is my piece. I get to do this. You don't touch it. So how did we approach this problem? How did we get the research team to work with us? Well, first we sat down with them and we talked to them, which seems pretty basic, but just listening to them and hearing what their concerns were, why they felt like we would introduce bias, really opened up some kind of ideas for us on how we might be able to tackle this problem. And we didn't argue with them. We did not argue with them at all. We completely validated their concerns. And I think that that went a long way to them sort of understanding that we're not here to sort of beat them or push them out. But then we communicated to them what our value was, what we thought we could actually contribute to the project, what kinds of questions we might be able to think about for the user that would help us not only understand the research results and be able to use them in the next phase, but also to be able to actually kind of figure out how we might be able to sort of structure some of these questions so that we're getting to those things. So they definitely were concerned about that, and we had some kind of resistance in those discussions. But we also expressed to them our willingness to learn from them and what they do, and that they were the experts. We value what they do. So through those conversations, we at least got them to cooperation, which was really fantastic. We did a survey, and they completely restructured their survey to help accommodate some of the design questions that we kind of wanted to get at, the questions that would influence our design. That's something that they hadn't done before, and so it was a really big win for us to be able to get them to do that. But, I mean, we were greedy. We wanted more. We didn't think that that was enough to just sort of, you know, okay, we'll let you kind of be a part of it. We wanted them to feel more integrated. So some of you may already be doing this in organizations, but we have not built a UX strategy in our organization. We'd never done this before. So we started having discussions about what that would look like, and we took it to the research team to have them help us figure out how we can use the research results that we were getting back to actually start building this UX strategy. And we, through that process, discovered some holes with our research team that kind of, we didn't have all the answers. We still needed more research. So we went to our client and we asked for more research, and this kind of blew the heads off of the research team. They really felt like, wow, they're really taking this seriously. They're not just trying to prove out an idea. They're really trying to figure out what that idea is going to be from our research.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention on that, like, their attitude was definitely understandable. It was just leading up to that point. Basically, within our own creative team, the thing that's always kind of thrown around is whether it's wireframe, strategy, research, that ultimately, you know, our idea can be so awesome that we'll backfill everything. So it's kind of this attitude of, you know, we know what we're doing and everybody else just kind of needs to get in line. So it was totally understandable that they didn't trust us at all when we kind of came to them.
Yeah, so we were able to, through showing them, not just talking about it, not just having those conversations, but then actually starting to build that strategy out, we showed them how we were going to use this research, and they were able to really trust that this research was genuine. And as a result, we were able to get the funding for the additional research, and we did user interviews. And we sat together to develop those questions, literally together. We used the research team's expertise to make sure that everything was fitting right and that they were comfortable with the study, but we really were able to help figure out how those questions would be formulated to sort of understand how we would be able to use that research in that next phase. So the next attitude we had to deal with was disregard. So now everybody's aligned. We have the entire team on board with this idea and this way of doing things. But then we had all of this research. So we completed the survey, we completed the user interviews, and we had charts and graphs and summaries and PowerPoint deck after PowerPoint deck with all of this information. And people will take the path of least resistance. So if they don't know how to use all this information, if they're overwhelmed by it, they're not going to use it. And we started to see people going back to some of those design discussions. So the research is done. We're all really excited about it, but how do we use it? So we started to go back to those design discussions, you know, kind of that hodgepodge again of just, you know, okay, that was done. Now we can move on to, you know, talking about, you know, fixing your car and whatever else it was going to do.
Yeah, basically a little point on that, like even just something being in an Excel document is too much for the creative team. Like, we won't even look at that. So
yeah,
just something that we totally had no experience even reading.
Yeah, one of our creatives said, this isn't a language I know how to interpret, which is very, very true. So how did we get to disregard? Well, we have an assumption in our organization that the optimal tools have already been created for communicating our knowledge. We have so many templates, template after template after template, that have already been created that we just take and plug into, you know, whatever information we have, we plug it into it. It makes us really efficient, but it doesn't make us very good communicators. They become just this milestone marker or a demonstration of cross-departmental involvement. Look, we have a strategy presentation. They've done their job. We have wireframes. They've done their job. Check. On to the next thing. So the action becomes that that deliverable is just seen as a green light. People are just, you know, okay, we've done the wireframes. Now we can move on to Photoshopping it up and completely changing everything that was done. And that leads us to that disregard of just, it's okay, I can get away with this, I don't need to listen, I don't need to worry about it because I don't understand it. So our problem approach for this was team-based affinity diagramming first. So if you've not done an affinity diagram, I highly recommend looking into it. It's a really great way to organize your notes and figure out what themes are kind of pulled out from that. So we did that together. We didn't stop there. Once we had the themes out, we actually sat down and started talking about the research, started talking about these themes and these ideas, and we brainstormed ways that we could show the results in ways that we felt like people could understand. We took the templates that we already had, and we started to sort of think about how we could rework them. And we created our own template for an experience map that showed the customer journey that we were mapping out. And we just made it our own. We didn't worry about, you know, anything that we needed to conform to or any convention that we had already established. This is sort of a fuzzy version of it. It's proprietary. We haven't built the awesome app yet, so we can't show you. But it's really just to point out that we didn't have to worry about it being super technical looking and, you know, kind of cater to that audience, or worry about it being really pretty and, you know, make sure that the stakeholders, you know, thought that it looked cool or whatever, you know, whatever assumption we were making about what the client would think would look cool. We just made it something that the team that was going to use it could understand. So through that, people were interested now, really interested in how the research could influence design. But it wasn't enough. We wanted that just absolute clear cut, this is what this is what we're doing. So we created one sentence to rule them all. And we did this through the elevator pitch GameStorm. If you haven't picked up the book GameStorming yet, it is a little goldmine of awesome activities you can do with your team to solve a whole bunch of different kinds of problems. So knowing that we needed to have this kind of one high-level sentence to sort of define what we were doing, we got the entire team together and we did this elevator pitch where we brainstormed each of these different ideas based on the research that we had done and based on our objectives. And we did this in three groups, and what we found was that every single group had almost the same sentence. We were all in different rooms. And what that said to us was that people were interpreting this research the right way, the same way, I should say. And that meant that we were really all integrated the way we wanted to be and that we were all really on board with this idea. It made it really easy to make one sentence out of those two. So through that, people were committed to this now. And not just because they were emotionally tied to the research and excited about it and understood it, but now they actually understood how to take it to that next stage. And as a result, we've started those design discussions again, but now we have discussions that show how those lead up to this one sentence, this one idea, and we can dig it deeper into the rest of the research through this kind of filter of this one sentence. So our last attitude is apathy. As you can imagine, this whole process really was super fun, and everybody was excited about it. You know, people were really not apathetic about this process at all, but they were apathetic about how this process might be used in any other project. We found people saying things like, "I really wish all my projects were like this," as if there were something special about this project that made this be able to happen. So how did we get there? Well, we have an assumption that organizational culture is really only influenced by our leadership. It comes from the top down. And through that, we really value our leadership, and we feel like we kind of need to respect what they want, that somehow what the CEO says we should be doing should trickle down into our processes and fit every single team. So there's really no flexibility built into the process for individual team dynamics. And that turns us into apathetic employees. So how did we approach this problem? Well, this one's a little different because this one, now we're kind of organically starting to unify just through the process of being integrated. The team was understanding our process. They understood the whys behind the whats, why we were doing what we were doing. And as we checked in with our stakeholders and clients, they really saw our passion and excitement about this and our full team knowledge of what we were doing and our clear direction. So through this, we got support. It was natural. People just started supporting us and wanting us to see more and see what we could do. And kind of also naturally, people started sharing this stuff with their departments. It kind of snuck up on me. I didn't expect it, that people were going to go to their departments with the deliverables that we created as a team that weren't necessarily associated with their department and showing them, look what we did as a team, look what I was a part of.
I actually had that presentation pitched back to me after this as, oh, you guys should do your next project like this. And it was like, well, yeah.
So it was great. I mean, people just became natural advocates of what we were doing. And through that, people started coming to us, people outside of this project, who before had never even heard of the Awesome App. They didn't know what it was, because this was kind of just this weird, fuzzy idea that the client was just like, eh, see if it has legs. They started to ask us about it, and they wanted to know where they could find this process, which is so telling of our headspace that like this process was going to be written in stone somewhere and they could just pick it up and just implement it. But it's a start and it's a great way to sort of get people thinking about process in a different way as something that's flexible and that can change. So after those 2 months, our prototype and the idea that the client needed to see a prototype in order to see how awesome we are was completely replaced with this deeper understanding of our users and this really clear direction for design. So that's what we're doing. We built on our small wins within this project. We got through impulsiveness, we got through territorialism, we got through all of these things. And now we're seeing this project as a small win, and we're barreling forward with this small win to continue on other projects. We have our next project sort of set up for doing it just this way, not this exact process, but changing this process in this way. And that's really how change happens, is through those building on those small wins.
So first we worked to reach them with empathy. We sat down, listened, understood everybody's perspective, and really worked hard to make everybody part of the team. And once we did that, it was really easy to convince them with our logic. It still could be a painfully slow process, but ultimately, change doesn't happen overnight. It can be a slow, bumpy ride, sometimes very little progress at all, but ultimately, you just have to kind of keep moving forward. People are going to resist. They can be jerks about this. They can be extremely hard to work with, and more than likely, you're going to have lots of failures as you kind of go through this process, but basically, don't become apathetic, and the best advice we have is really just keep trying.
So these are some of the books and PowerPoints that we referenced in order to structure this talk, as well as to sort of analyze our own kind of ideas of how this process went down. I highly recommend all of them. That continuum that we created, we kind of skirted by that is a Dan Klein concoction because it's kind of complicated, and he has a wonderful talk about it that is up on SlideShare, and I definitely recommend if you're interested in that idea of communicating information to your clients or stakeholders to take a look at that. So, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
The 2014 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's All You Can Learn. UIE's All You Can Learn will give you the skills and techniques you need for a competitive design advantage with 24/7 access to UX experts and topics. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thank you for listening.